Okay. So we've got a quiz next time. So just like the quiz you did, 10-minute problem, not with a lot of parts, and it'll deal with what we did on this lecture. There is an online quiz from 10 years ago, but it's, I don't know, it might be a little bit harder than your quiz, but it would be in the realm of possibility, and there's a screencast that shows the solution to that problem. Questions? Questions about the quiz or the quiz that you have in your hands?
What was it out of
20.
Oh, okay.
Gone. Okay, so last time we talked about vectors. At this point, vectors shouldn't seem all that useful to you. And as I say, historically, it's one of the more recent things that we're going to be talking about this semester. It's basically just a way of combining the x and the y coordinates into one thing. So the book doesn't use this notation, but I find it really helpful to be able to split out what the x and y components are of a particular vector. If you do that, then to find the sum of vectors, you're just going to add up the x components to find the x component of the sum and add up the y components to get the y component of the sum. Or you're going to subtract them if you're subtracting vectors. If we're thinking about vectors as these little arrowy things, then if you're going to add them, you're going to put the tip to tail. So if you want to find out what a plus b is, you're going to move b so that the tail of b is at the tip of a. And then you're going to move c so that the tail of c is at the tip of b. And then the sum goes from the start to the end. Or you could just add up the components if you have them. If we're going to subtract two vectors, then you put the tails together, like these two, and then you go from one tip to the other tip. You go from the tip that has the minus sign in front of it to the tip of the other vector. So here you can see, here's b and a, and so b minus a is this vector. Here's c, and there's b, and so b minus c is that vector. So we're interested in positions, velocities, and accelerations in this class. So we're going to put together x and y positions and make a displacement vector. Once we've got a displacement vector, we can divide it by the time difference to get an average velocity vector. But usually we're actually interested in the instantaneous velocity, and it's just going to be the instantaneous x velocity and the instantaneous y velocity put together as into one thing. So this is the calculus notation for that, but you don't need to know that. It's just the instantaneous velocities in the x and y directions put together. And it's guaranteed to be tangent to the path that the object is traveling in. Once we've got velocities, we can look at changes in velocities to make accelerations. And it all works pretty much the same. I think the one surprise is that accelerations can point in kind of surprising directions. So if you think about something that's moving in a circle, for example, so the velocity vector has to be tangent to the path, so that might be the velocity at that time, and this might be the velocity at that time. So the change in velocity, right, if I bring these two to a common spot, the change in velocity is not in the direction of the velocity. And the instantaneous change in velocity will in fact be perpendicular to that velocity vector. So the acceleration vector in two dimensions doesn't have to point in any particular direction. Right? So in the case of motion in one dimension, acceleration, deacceleration, those terms all kind of made sense. Here we can have accelerations that are perpendicular to the velocity, and seems a little bit funny. Questions on any of that? So again, I recommend kind of figuring out how to do these polar rectangular converters on your calculator. If you've got questions about it, you can stop by my office. I think I've learned how to do it on the 84. I haven't investigated the 89 too much. But there is, for the 84 at least, there's a nice YouTube video that shows you kind of exactly how to do it. Questions? So remember, the main motivation for doing vectors in the first place is because what goes along in this direction doesn't care about what happens in that direction. And we demonstrated that last time with the bullet drop experiment, where we shot a gun in one direction and we dropped the bullet at the same time. And I claim that the altitude of the two bullets was the same at any second. And we could certainly hear that they hit the ground at the same time. So we can do the same thing, maybe more dramatically, by looking at a tilted version of that same experiment. So I've got here a gun that I can shoot at something that's not horizontal, but is up in the air. And I can hold that up in the air with this electromagnet. And the gun is designed so that when the ball exits, it's going to break the electrical connection, and it's automatically going to drop the gong at the same time that the bullet exits. And I claim that even though this thing is all at an incline, need a little bit more juice. Even though this thing is all at an incline, it still works that what's going on in one direction isn't going to affect the other. Actually, I didn't have it turned on, so definitely didn't have enough juice. Okay, so first of all, for practice, there's this little switch that when the ball comes out this gun, it works better with a ball. It's going to drop that thing at exactly the same time. So I've got a bullet. I'm not sure exactly which one. Oh, there it is. So I've got a bullet. I can load this gun. I can close the switch. Turn on the power. I guess the power's been on all the time. And the gun is exactly aimed at the gong. So the traditional story that goes along with this is monkey hunting. So the imp, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't be killing primates, but the idea is that the hunter is shooting at the monkey, and he's aimed it, and as soon as the sound of the gun goes off, the monkey drops. So the monkey's dropping, the bullet's dropping, and the question is the monkey dead anyway? Would the monkey have been better off not to drop, I guess? A human-powered gun. It's coming down. Okay, I can get it later. Okay? So it doesn't matter that things are an incline, still, everything's falling the same, so the bullet's going to hit the monkey in any case sometime. Okay, so the content for what we're talking about today is this sort of problem, where we have two-dimensional motion of this projectile. And of course, the equations that we've studied are still going to be applicable. The bullet is in free fall. Which means that it's going to suffer an acceleration down at this 9.8 meters per second squared. Meanwhile, nothing special is going to be happening in the x direction. We're going to have motion at a constant speed. So, kind of the generic problem, we've got a gun with some muzzle velocity, and we're interested in tracing its path in terms of its delta x and its delta y location. So delta y is going to work, I hope, just like you would guess. The change in y depends on the initial velocity in the y direction times time, minus 1/2 gt squared. Right? Just exactly what we've been doing. The y direction isn't affected by what's going on in the x direction. So we know, for example, that the velocity in the y direction is going to be the initial velocity in the y direction less the effect of gravity. We know, under these circumstances, that the velocity in the y direction is the initial velocity in the y direction squared plus, which is going to be minus, 2 times the acceleration times the displacement, in this case, delta y. Right? We know that the average y velocity is the average that we could calculate by the change in position divided by the time. So there's nothing new in those equations. Nothing changes in the y direction from what we've been doing in the past. we've got uniform acceleration in the vertical directions. So the same old equations apply. In the x directions, things are even simpler because the thing is going to move with a constant speed. Oops. And so the change in x location is just given by the average velocity, which is the always velocity, because in fact, the velocity in the x direction isn't going to change. Okay. Well, these equations occur commonly enough that we typically want to kind of combine them. And maybe the first question that you would ask in these sort of circumstances is, if you're on level ground, how far will the bullet go before it hits the ground? That's called the range. And obviously, it depends on the speed and the angle that you throw it at. How exactly do all of those things come out? Well, if we knew the time it hits the ground, it would be real easy to calculate the x location, right? We could just plug into that equation. And we could, if we really wanted to, I guess, calculate the time for when the vertical location is back to zero. But it's easier often to look at the top. The top is, I hope, obviously half what the total is. And for that, what's special about this location is it stopped going up. It's been going up for a while, and now it's going to start to go down. And so it's real easy to calculate the time using a linear equation as opposed to a quadratic equation. And what we get then is that V sub O y minus gt has to be 0. So gt has to be V naught y. So the time to reach the top has to be V naught y over g. And of course, the time to hit the ground just has to be twice that. And so if we plug and chug, what we've got then is 2 times the velocity in the x direction times the velocity in the y direction, all divided by g. That's going to be the range. Now, typically, guns are rated by their muzzle velocity. And so that's a number that we would often know as opposed to the x and y components of velocity. But if we know the speed, it's pretty easy to calculate the components that are in the x and y direction. Right? So this y component, it's a side that's opposite theta, so it's going to be the sine of theta times the hypotenuse. The initial x velocity, the always x velocity, is going to be the muzzle velocity times the cosine of the angle, because this is a side that's adjacent to the hypotenuse, well, to the angle. So if we plug those guys in, what we've got is 2 times V naught cosine theta, V naught sine theta, all divided by g. And now, if you remember a trig identity, we've got 2 times the cosine of the theta times sine of the theta is always equal to the sine of the doubled angle. So if I take this 2 and this cosine and this sine, notice that I've got 2 v's here. So I've got v naught squared divided by g times the sine of 2 theta. Hmm? So this is kind of our starting point, right? And that came from the velocity and the time being everything else there. So the y component here, v sub o y, is equal to sine v naught. And this adjacent sine is v naught cosine. So I just plugged in for this as that, and this as that. More questions? So I think it's kind of obvious that if you launch something literally in a straight line, it's going to fall immediately. The range is going to be 0. And if I throw it straight up, it's going to be 0. and there's some kind of in-between angle at which you can actually get it to go some finite distance. And that all matches with this equation, because if I put in 0 degrees, the sine of 0 is 0, and I'm not going to go anyplace. If I put in 90 degrees, the sine of 180 degrees is also 0, and I'm not going to go anyplace. Sine actually gets its maximum value if x is equal to 90 degrees. And that means that for us, 2 theta wants to be 90 degrees, or the maximum angle is going to be 45 degrees. I think that makes perfectly good sense, that if you want to get something to go as far downrange as possible, you're going to incline it at about 45 degrees. Now, that's a calculation that doesn't include air resistance, but it's good enough for typically baseballs and things like that, if not for rocket ships. Questions?
So that final equation is equal to the max change in x?
Yeah. Now, maybe I shouldn't say the max change in x, because if, you know, if there were a cliff here, it could go to a larger range of x. So this is the distance that it goes on level ground. So where it re-intersects y equals 0. More questions? Okay, so like before the other quiz, kind of my plan is to go through a bunch of problems and see what we can make out of them. So this is 26, and what it says is that the world's record for throwing cow pies is 81.1 meters. And if we assume that it was launched at 45 degrees, how fast was it thrown, and what was the hang time? Okay, so the first part of the problem is pretty simple, because it's just a plug and chug, right? So we have this equation that relates the range and the inclination angle. And if we throw it at 45 degrees, remember that the sine of 90 is 1, that's all going to be reduced to 1. So the initial speed then is going to be the range that it went times g. So of course the initial speed is going to be just the square root of that. So we need the square root of 81.1 meters times 9.8 meters per second squared. Let's take a second to look at units. So we're going to have meters squared up top and seconds squared on the bottom. So when we take the square root of those, we're going to get exactly meters per second. Sounds good for a speed. So then all I need to do is to take 81.1 times 9.8 and take the square root, and I get 28.2 meters per second. What's the hang time? Well, we figured out the time it took to go to a maximum. That's how long you had to wait to bleed off all of your initial velocity. And the whole time was just twice that. And although we don't know v sub o y to start with, we do know the angle and the initial speed now. So the hang time is going to be twice the initial velocity in the y direction divided by g. And that's the initial speed times the sine of 45 degrees divided by g. So we've got our 28.2 times 28.2 divided by 9.8. And then we've got the sine of 45 degrees, which is 0.707, 1 over the square root of 2. So we got 2 times that, 9.8 divided by, and 45 sine times all that. And I get 4.07 seconds, I think. Let's check the units. So up top, we've got meters per second. Below, we've got meters per second squared. So the meters go away and 1 over the seconds go away. And we have 1 over 1 over seconds, and that is, in fact, going to give us seconds. So we found that in the first part.
Oh, you just used over
there. Yep, so I used this number 28.2 that we calculated in the first part.
And then do we not need to use that sine 2 theta, like that part over on that area?
Looks like I didn't use it.
Okay.
But I did. So when I use something but it doesn't show, it must be 1.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so then what is that equation now? The R equals, like, what is that? What can we use that for?
So that's what we call the range equation. It's how far something would travel on flat ground, where it would re-hit the ground, okay. Which is presumably how they do these contests. More questions? So, I don't know, kind of a plug in and a chug. So here we're looking at the problem of clearing potential avalanches. So you could, you know, walk up to the snowbank and put your TNT in there, but you're not sure that you're going to be able to walk back. So the idea is to remotely have an explosion. We're going to fire an artillery shell at the snowbank and have it explode to cause an avalanche when no one is there. And so we're told that the gun fires bullets at 300 meters per second, and it's aimed at 55 degrees. This is in mountainous territory, though, so there should be no implication that it's going to have the same altitude when it hits the snowbank. The snowbank might be higher or lower than where the gun is. And that's what we're supposed to find. Where is the snowbank compared to the gun? So what we're told is time takes 42 seconds for the thing to go, an initial velocity, and an angle. And what we want are positions, right? We want delta x and delta y. And x is pretty simple, right? Things just move at a constant speed. So if I know the speed in the x direction, all I need to do is to multiply it by the 42 seconds to get how far downrange it went. And I can, of course, get the x component of the velocity by this triangle. It's a side that's adjacent to the angle theta. So the initial, which is to say always velocity in the x direction, is just given by v naught times cosine theta. So what I've got then is the downrange distance I go is v naught cosine theta. That's just what the initial velocity is in the x direction, times the time. So we've got 300 meters per second times the cosine of 55 degrees times the 42 seconds that the thing is going to travel. You get all those numbers right? I think so. Okay, so 300, 42 seconds, cosine of 55 degrees, and what I get is 7.227 times 10 to the third. Let's check units. So we've got meters per second. The seconds cancel out. So this is 7,000 meters, which is, of course, 7.227 kilometers. All right, so I don't know, 5 miles downrange. In terms of the altitude change where the snowbank is, we've got this equation here. So we need the initial velocity in the y direction, the time, and the effects of gravity. The initial velocity in the y direction, we can just use this triangle. Right? So we know that the vertical velocity is going to be the sine of the angle times the muzzle velocity of the gun. So what we've got is the 300 meters per second, the sine of 55 degrees, times the 42 seconds that things are going to last, and then we need to subtract off the effects of gravity in the vertical direction. So we got 300, we've got the sine of 55, and the 42 seconds. So this is about 10 kilometers in round numbers. And in the vertical direction, we've got the 42 squared. And this is about 8.6 kilometers. So when I subtract these guys, and I'm doing it with all the significant digits, I get 1.678 times 10 to the third meters, which is 1.68 kilometers. So roughly 5 miles downrange and 1 mile high, that's where this snowbank is. Must be a pretty high mountain. Okay, so we know time, muzzle velocity, angles. We can apply the equations we're used to and figure out where things are going. So this is kind of a slightly more complicated version of the same thing. So the story is that these kids playing on this rooftop have lost a ball. This guy is going to kick the ball back to them, and it's going to go, hopefully, onto the playground that's on top of the roof. We're told that the wall of the school is 24 meters from the kicking, and this total height is 7 meters, and this fence kind of around the edge is 1 meter tall. And we're supposed to figure out lots of things from this data. Right, so we're told distances and angles and heights and times, and we're supposed to figure out right off the start what was the speed at which the ball was launched. So we can't use the range equation now, right? Which is what we did the first time we wanted to find a speed, because the altitude change, there is an altitude change when it goes from there to there. The range equation would tell us where this thing would hit if the school were destroyed and it was going to re-hit the ground down here. So what we need, an equation that has speeds in it and has times in it, because we know this, and say has distances in it. And if you think about it, there are a couple of equations that maybe would come to mind, namely this guy, right, which has positions and times and velocities and g, which we also know, and this guy. But this guy is a way simpler equation than that one. So I think they'll both work, but this guy is pretty simple. So let's use it, because we know that the ball went horizontally the 24 meters in 2.2 seconds. So what we've got then is, didn't need to erase that equation. So we've got then, in general, is the horizontal displacement is the muzzle velocity times the cosine of the angle we're shooting at times time. Horizontally, we're going 24 meters. The time it takes is 2.2 seconds, I think. And the angle that we're shooting this at is 53 degrees. So the only thing we don't know in this equation is the muzzle velocity, as it were, the kick speed of this ball. Now we can just rearrange things, put the cosine theta and the time in the denominator. So we've got 24 meters divided by the cosine of 53 degrees times 2.2 seconds. You can do a unit check. We've got meters on the top, we've got seconds down below, so we're going to get meters per second, which sounds good for a speed. So all I need to do is to crank out 24 divided by 2.2 divided by the cosine of 53 degrees. And what I get is 18.1 meters per second. Okay, so what is the altitude of this ball when it goes over the wall? By how much extra distance did it have? So we're interested in an altitude at a particular time, and that's all nicely set up to use this equation here, right? We now know the initial speed, and we know the angle, we know what g is, we know what the time is, so we can figure out the altitude at any old time, in particular at that magic time when it crosses the wall. So the change in y is equal to the initial velocity in the y direction times time minus 1/2 the acceleration of gravity times time squared. The time we're interested in is 2.2 seconds. G, the one number I asked you to memorize, is 9.8 meters per second squared. The initial velocity is going to be the initial muzzle velocity times the sine of the angle that we're shooting. We know that the muzzle velocity is 18.1 meters per second, and we know that the angle is 53 degrees. So if we plug all of that stuff in, we've got 18.1 meters per second times the sine of 53 degrees times the 2.2 seconds less the effects of gravity. Okay, I still got the 18.1 on my calculator, so I need the sine of 53 degrees and the 2.2 seconds, and then I want to subtract the effects of gravity, and what I get is 8.133 meters. So again, the picture then, this wall is 7 meters high. The ball, when it's crossing it, is at 8.133 meters. So this extra displacement, that's 1.13 meters. Okay, so the future of that ball is it's going to land on the roof of this school. And we're supposed to figure out basically exactly where it hits this, I'll call it ground, but it's vertically above where the other one was. Where is it going to hit? And of course, we'd be all set if we knew the time. Right? Because I could plug into this equation and I'd be good to go. I know the time is a little bit more than 2.2 seconds. But I don't know exactly how much time it is. So I need an equation that involves time. What is special about this is that the altitude is 6 meters. So I know the altitude, I know initial speeds and angles, and I know g. What we're led to is this guy. And it's not exactly pleasant because that's a quadratic equation.
Why is it 6 when it's supposed to be 7?
Yeah, so this is in this geometry of the problem, which is seemingly overly complicated. So this wall is 7 meters high, but this fence is 1 meter high. Now it's nicely smudged. Okay, so this rooftop playground is h minus 1 meter, 6 meters high. Well, we just have to bite the bullet and solve the quadratic equation. So the kind of generic form of the quadratic equation is a times x squared plus b times x plus c equals 0. And the solution to that is the opposite of b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac all over 2a. An equation that you're almost certainly going to put on your cheat sheet.
Where are we calculating now at
this point? So what we're trying to get is exactly where it hits this top. And what I'm suggesting how we're going to find that is by finding the time. If we've got the time, then we've got the location. It'll be easy. But we're going to have to pay to get the time. What's special about this time is that the altitude is 6 meters. And of course, that happened twice, right? So we're kind of forced to this guy. So quadratic equations, I don't know. We can see that there are two solutions, and we want the solution that's a little bit more than 2.2 seconds. Let's try and get it into the right form. So 6 meters is supposed to be the altitude, and we know that the initial speed was 18.1 meters per second, and we've got the sine of 53 degrees times t minus the effects of gravity. And I don't know, someplace we have to actually go to numbers. So this guy here, I can tell you, is not that. What did I do? Oh, I know. Okay, still good. So this is 14.48 meters per second. So the first thing I need to do is to get this, and of course half of g is going to be 4.9. So I need to get this thing into that form. And there are lots of ways of doing it. I kind of like positive numbers. So I'm going to take this negative term and bring it to this side of the equation. I can't get them all positive. When this guy comes to this side of the equation, it's going to come up with a negative. So what I'm going to have then is 4.9 times t squared minus this 14.48 times t plus 6 is equal to 0. So this 4.9, that's equal to a. This minus 14 and a half is equal to b. And this plus 6 is equal to c. And all I need to do is to plug and chug into that equation. So the time is going to be minus b, so that's going to be plus 14.48 plus or minus the square root of minus 14.48 squared minus 4 times 6 times 4.9 all over 2a, which is 9.8. Now, I hope it's clear that we want the later time. We want this time, not that time. So, I don't know, off to the races. So we need to square that 14. And 4 times 6 is 24. 4.9 times that, subtract, square root. I guess I believe that. This quantity after the square root is about 4.37 I've got. So if I add that to the 14.48 and divide by 9.8, I get something that I don't believe. Okay, so let me do it again. 14.48, square it. I've got 24, 4.9 times it. Oops, made a mistake. 14.48, square it. 24, 4.9 times it, subtract it, square root it. Okay, so now I get 9.6 for this quantity. So that's not 4.6, that is 4 times 6 times 4.9. So I think I've got 14.48 plus 9.8 divided by, yes, I finally get a number, I believe, 2.46 seconds. And I believe it because it's a little bit more than 2.2 seconds. Well, after that exhausting work, I'm not done, right? I still need to calculate the x position using that equation there. So now I've got the initial speed, which is still 18.1 meters per second. The time is this time that we just spent the time calculating. So we've got the cosine of 53 degrees, and we've got 18.1, and I get 26.76 meters. So the wall was 24 meters. So the ball is going to hit basically 2.8 meters beyond this wall. This wall is shown here as being thick, so maybe I should say the front of that wall. Okay. Well, this is, I think, a easier problem after a hard one. So what we have is we've got a ball that's being thrown straight upward, a lot higher than that, so high that its hang time is 3 seconds. And then we're going to throw a ball at a 30 degree angle, and it's going to stay as long, it's going to have the same hang time as the first ball. Well, I guess it's going to have the same maximum height as the first ball. And we're supposed to calculate what's the speed in all of these circumstances. Okay, so straight up and down, 3 seconds. And then it reaches that same height when we throw it at 30 degrees, but of course it's going to go a much larger distance. Okay, so the first part of the problem is something we could have done from the last chapter. Right? It's all straight up and down. You remember that what's special is about the top, that's where the velocity is equal to zero. That velocity is being lost at a rate that's given by the acceleration of gravity. So this high time is going to be the initial speed divided by g. And of course, it's equal to half of the whole hang time. So the initial velocity is going to be the time it takes to go up times 9.8. Let's do a unit check. We've got meters per second squared times seconds. So the seconds go away, and speed should have units of meters per second, and they do. So we got 9.8, 1.5, 14.7 meters per second. Okay, so what does the initial speed have to be if we throw it at 30 degrees and it reaches the same height? If it reaches the same height, it absolutely has to have the same y velocity as the other one did, right? Because the y components are totally separate from the x components. And we know that it's being shot at an angle of 30 degrees. And what they're asking us for is the hypotenuse. And we know that the sine of 30 degrees is equal to the opposite divided by the hypotenuse. So the hypotenuse, the full speed, is going to be the initial speed in the y direction, which for all of them is that. So we've got 14.7 meters per second divided by the sine of 30 degrees. Sine of 30 degrees is actually a half, and so we're going to get 29.4 meters per second.
Where did you get the initial speed?
So we got the initial speed from the problem that we could have worked last time. So we know that it went straight up and it came straight down, and the hang time was 3 seconds. So the time it took to have no forward velocity was 1.5 seconds. So that time to bleed off all that initial speed had to be given by that equation. So we got this guy for that speed. The other one went up at an angle, but it went to the same height. And you know that the y directions are totally separate from the x direction, so it had to have the same initial y speed. It had to have a lot of x speed too in order to be going that away. But they never asked us for that. They asked for the total speed. You're cogitating. No, behind you. You believe it?
Sure.
That's a way of saying no, I think. Does it make sense?
Not okay. Really.
Not really.
I just didn't follow why you could just put that in there.
So by putting it in there, you mean the initial velocity in the y direction.
Yes.
Yeah. So remember that what's happening horizontally has no effect of what's happening vertically. So if something goes up and down and reaches some height, going straight up and down, it has to have exactly the same y velocity when it's thrown. Because the y's are totally separate from the x's. So that's kind of the important conclusion in this this whole lecture, is you can treat the x's and y's as totally separate. What's going on for one is totally different. So we can drop a bullet and fire a bullet. Their altitude is going to be the same. We can shoot the bullet at the monkey, but they're still going to hit. Okay. Well, so we're getting towards the end of the chapter where the more difficult problems occur. Let's take a look at 56, or I guess this is 58. So 58 is kind of a standard basketball question. We have somebody that's 10 feet from the basket, and he's got his calibrated arm. He's trying to figure out what muzzle velocity he needs to do if he shoots at 40 degrees to put it in the hoop. And he's a pretty tall guy. He's 2 meters tall. And the basket, 10 feet, turns out in meters, that's 3.05 meters. And so we're supposed to find what the speed is that he needs in order to make that shot. Now, in the past, we had some time information. And so we ended up using those equations that involve time. Here we don't have any time information. So what we really need is some equations that don't involve time. We need kind of the equation for what this path is. Galileo was the first guy who figured out that path was a parabola. So let's see if we can confirm his considerations. Okay, so what we know, we've got a path kind of like that. And for this particular problem, we're interested in this hoop, which is 1.05 meters above the shot location, and it's 10 meters downstream. But we want the general solution. We want to know what the altitude is at any old location x. What we know is locations as a function of time. So we now have to kind of switch things around. So instead of having time in our equations, we've got x in our equations. So let's see what we got. We got that delta y, that's the altitude change, is the initial velocity in the y direction times time, less the effects of gravity. And we know that horizontally, the thing is just moving steadily, so that the location could always be calculated by just the distance times the speed times the time. And kind of the plan is to solve this equation for time and plug it in there to get the altitude as a function of downrange distance. Okay, so we've got delta x over the initial velocity in the x direction, the always velocity in the x direction. That's time. So I can plug that in into those equations. So I've got v sub o y, the time is the distance downrange divided by the velocity in the x direction, minus 1 half g times the downrange distance divided by v sub o x squared. So this quantity here, if you think about it, there's a triangle, right? There's a triangle of velocities. So we have the velocity in the y direction on top of the velocity in the x direction. And that's the same thing as the tangent of the angle. And that makes some sense, right? Initially, this ball is going to go in the direction that you shoot it at some angle theta. So that quantity is all tangent theta. The rest of it, I don't know, it's looking kind of like a mess. Let's see what we can make out of it. I'm not looking particularly optimistic. So everything except the delta x squared is g divided by 2 v sub o x squared. And v sub o x squared is the whole velocity times the cosine of the angle squared. It doesn't look like we're getting any place. But if you think about it, the answer has to be simple. The answer actually has to be the following. It has to start out going the way you shoot it, right? And we already have that piece of it. But we have one other bit of information, and that is when x is equal to the range, it better be back at zero. So, and it has to be a quadratic. So the equation has to be that. It's the only thing that works. You remember that the equation for the range was v sub o squared divided by g times the sine of twice the angle. I don't know. It doesn't really look like it's going to be that, but it's got to be that, right? It's got to go at the initial slope, and it's got to be back at zero when x is equal to the range. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I take it the g and the 2 are pretty clear. So what we had here is the v sub o x squared in the denominator. And you remember that the initial velocity in the x direction we can get from the fact that it's adjacent in that triangle. So we've got a cosine.
Yeah. And then what did we do with the change in x?
So that all needs to be multiplied by delta x squared. I said I was extracting the coefficient of x.
Oh.
Well, so I claim it's got to look like that, but it's not looking good. But maybe that gives us some hope that if we crank a little bit more, it'll work out. So let's pull out this factor of tangent theta times delta x. That was the whole first term. What I've got left is a minus sign. I have a delta x squared. And I've got all of this garbage that we talked about, g divided by 2 v sub o squared cosine squared theta. And if I pulled out a tangent that wasn't there, I better put it back. Well, it's maybe getting a little bit closer. Let's take a look at the trigonometry. So we have 2 cosine squared theta times the tangent of theta there in the denominator. Tangent theta is sine theta divided by cosine theta. So what we've got is 2 cosine theta sine theta, which is exactly what we needed to give us sine of 2 theta. So believe it or not, all of this garbage is exactly that. So this equation isn't in the book, but I think it's both useful and memorable. Right? All you have to do to remember that equation is we have to start out the way we push it at tangent of theta, and it has to be zero when x is equal to the range. It's the only equation that does all those things. You also have a cheat sheet you can write it on. Okay, yep.
So what equation should we know now?
This one here. So for any downrange location delta x, you can get the altitude by taking the tangent of delta x times the quantity 1 minus delta x over the range, where the range is given by the formula we had before. Well, it's a long way around the barn. Does it actually help us solve this problem? Well, we know a value of y, namely y is equal to 1.05 meters at a particular value of x. And we know the initial angle. So the only thing we don't know in that equation is the range. And that's not exactly what we wanted, but it's getting close, right? The range is that full distance that the ball would go if you missed. Okay, well, let's crank on this guy for a while. So I think the letters are easier to move than the numbers, but your mileage may vary. So the delta x is 10, the angle is 40 degrees. And the change in altitude is 1.05 meters, if you want to put in numbers. And what I'm trying to find is the distance that the ball would go if it missed. So algebra time. So I want to get that guy separate in the end. So let me take all of that stuff and divide it through. So I get delta y divided by the tangent of theta times delta x is equal to 1 minus delta x over r.
Isn't the height of the basket 3.05 meters?
Yeah, but he's starting from 2 meters.
Oh,
he's 2 right meters tall.
Okay.
So let's put this thing on this side of the equation and this thing on that side of the equation, because it's the r we're trying to isolate. So we get delta x over r is equal to 1 minus delta y divided by the tangent of theta times delta x, and we're getting kind of close now, because I can bring the r up and everything else down. So what I've got is r is equal to delta x divided by 1 minus delta y over the tangent of theta times delta x. Easy. These are the ones at the end of the book. So what we've got then is our delta x, we said, was 10 meters. 1 minus the 1.05 divided by the tangent of 40 degrees times delta x, which is 10 meters. All of that is the range. And that is, oops, it's long enough that the calculator goes dead. So we've got 1.05 and the tangent of 40. And divide that by 10. And kind of makes sense. We're looking for a number that's, I mean, it's not that far before it's going to hit. So I get 11.43. Are we done yet? No. Because it asked for the speed, right? We're nearly done. The range is equal to the speed squared divided by g times the sine of 2 theta. So the speed squared is equal to this number that we just calculated, 11.43, times g divided by the sine of 80 degrees. And we can take the square root, and I get 10.66 meters per second. You want one like that for the quiz, I take it. Say again? This sine of 80 degrees? A little bit louder?
The entire thing at the bottom.
That's all there is the sine of 80 degrees.
No,
oh, the whole equation. So we've got that these two things are the same. So the g comes up, the sine of 2 theta comes down, and I take the square root to get v naught. Easy. The sports questions are the hard questions. And we go from hard to harder. So if you watch baseball, you will commonly see the outfielder throwing to home plate, but he's got a wimpy arm. He does it on the bounce as opposed to straight. So why doesn't he throw it straight? Why does he throw it on the bounce? Is there any advantage to throwing it on the bounce? And in particular, you want to get to home, want the ball to get to home plate before the runner does. So is it actually faster to do it on the bounce or to loft it and do it all in one step? So that's the question here. But if you look at this question, there are no numbers. So the claim is that we can work this problem out basically without knowing the distance to home or the speed that you're throwing. Nothing seems to matter. So I said there are no numbers here. There is one number here. It's a half. Right? So here it says that on the bounce, it's going to lose half its speed. Now what? Give up. Don't play baseball, huh? Do whatever coach says to do. Doing what coach says is always a good idea. And there are lots of other reasons why you might want to do it on a bounce, like getting the cutoff. But here the claim is just that this is faster to do it this way. The ball gets to home faster by doing it on the bounce. No numbers, just lots of letters. And they want answers in the end. They want us to calculate the angle that you throw it at in order to make it go and how much faster it is if you do it that way. So this is an example of a problem where it's clear it's not a plug and chug, right? There's no single equation that's going to answer this for us. We're going to have to go through lots of steps in order to get there. So where do you start? So often when there's no obvious starting place, what I tell you is ask yourself, if I knew some quantity, could I solve the problem? And then give that quantity a letter and pretend as if you knew it and then hope that in the end, that quantity either becomes clear or cancels out or something like that. But here, there's basically nothing. So what do you do when there's no obvious starting point whatsoever? Well, you start, right? What else can you do? You start. So for the long shot, one of the equations we know is the range equation. And that tells us that the distance we're going to go for that straight shot at 45 degrees is v squared over g, where I've plugged in that the sine of 2 theta is 1. And that has to equal the sum of those two distances, right? The first distance and the bounce distance. So how far does it go on that first bounce? Well, according to the range equation, it goes v squared over g times the sine of 2 theta. Well, I don't know what theta is. I don't know what anything is in this equation. I guess I know what g is. How far does it go on the second bounce? 1/2? The speed is 1/2. So if the speed is reduced by a factor of 2, how much is the distance going to be reduced by? It's going to be 1/4. Right? So this other distance is going to be 1/2 of V0 squared divided by g times the sine of 2 theta. So what we've got here on this side of the equation is everyone has a v squared over g times the sine of 2 theta. We've got this 1 and this 1/2 squared, which is 1/4. Now notice, I'm home free, right? I don't know what any of those quantities are, but in fact, they cancel out. So now I have an equation that just has one unknown in it, right? So I have 1 has to equal the sine of 2 theta times 5/4. So 4/5 has to be the sine of 2 theta. So if I take the inverse sine of 4/5, that's going to be 2 theta. So the angle is going to be 1/2 the inverse sine of 4/5. So 4/5, the inverse sine, 1/2 of it is 26.6 degrees. Okay, so I didn't know anything, but in the end, I actually figured out how with the angle I need to throw it at in order to make this work. Now, I haven't solved the problem yet because the problem actually involves time. How much time does it take in order to have this double bounce reach home? Well, let's try kind of the same conclusion. How much time does it take for the 45-degree shot to reach home? Well, remember that kind of the magic point is the maximum point. That's where you've bled off all of the upward velocity, and for that instant, you have zero upward velocity. So that time to reach maximum is the initial velocity in the y direction divided by g. And of course, the total time is just twice that. So for the direct route, we have whatever the initial speed is divided by g. And we're throwing this at 45 degrees, and we've got twice that. And of course, for the first bounce, it's the same story, right? It's going to be 2 times the initial velocity, but now we're throwing this at this angle of 26.6 degrees. And for the second bounce, we're just going to be going 1/2 as fast at the same angle. And notice that once again, we can also cancel off all these 2s, I guess. Everything cancels out. So the question is the sine of 26.6 plus half of the sine of 26.6, is that less than the sine of 45? If it is, then it's faster to do it on the bounce. And you can calculate that in the minute that we have of overtime, and it in fact is about 10% faster to do it on the bounce than to do it straight. Okay, so that's a hard problem. That won't be on the quiz next Thursday.
When is a situation when you use the R equation?
So we used it several times. So sometimes we had a plug and chug problem where the problem said the range is this, find the initial velocity.
Okay.
So what the range is it's how long it takes to go to the same level that it started at. So if you make a shot over flat ground, where does it hit?
Okay, so how long, what does it mean?
So it's the downrange distance that the bullet would hit on flat ground.
Okay. We have an equation on the board.
Yes, yep. So which one is that?
The one we just did.
The one?
Right before the
baseball. Oh, yeah.